It is time for This Week in the Lakeville Journal, except this week we'll call it, not only is it This Week in the Lakeville Journal, but also Millerton News. We're joined by Cynthia Hoswinder. Cynthia, good morning.
Good morning.
Janet, good morning.
Good morning.
Janet Manko joins us. Well, we can't get around it. One of the most disastrous, horrible weekends I can remember around here, not only since I've been back here, but before I left here, with the two fatalities in the fire, the Yang family, the family next to that in that house lost their house. We have five full families looking for housing, two deaths. This is just a story, Janet, that shakes you to the bone.
It's devastating. And, you know, to be on that scene and see those firefighters, what they were doing to try to save people as well as save those homes, it's incredible to watch. And I know they are all, having repercussions from having gone through that this past weekend. So think of them today on Veterans Day. They, as first responders, do so much for us. And this was a weekend that just tested them and shook them to the core, as well as all these families who need so much help now. And the thing that we can take some comfort in is that the community has stepped up in an amazing way and donated money, pulling together all sorts of home items. There's a meal train going through Northeast Community Center. They are collecting clothing, sheets, bed. You know, they lost everything. And it's just as difficult and tragic as life gets.
I know that last I checked, the GoFundMe for the Yang family was right around $100,000, and a new GoFundMe account has been set up for the other families in the next door house. And I think in the first few hours that was up, that was already up to $25,000, $30,000. This area, and I've said this all week long, is an amazing area. We can have political differences, we can argue, we can fight, but when people need help in this area, people deliver that help.
That's right. And this proves that and shows how everyone in these communities can come together across state lines as well.
We'll go away from that story. And by the way, congratulations. The Millerton Fire Department last night put on that event where if anybody needed to speak and talk about it, they had that event last night at 7 o'clock. And kudos to them, because the firefighters that worked this from just about every department, they need an outlet as well as everybody. So kudos to them for what they did last night. Other major stories on the front page, and I like the way you've got this set up. You've got the rally urging new vans to look at the increase in young families, and Patrick Sullivan has the story. Sharon Hospital says it's closing maternity to allow it to improve other areas. This is a big story, and yes, folks, it was highlighted by that fire to have a local hospital with an emergency room right here. That was highlighted this last weekend.
A lot going on this week, a very busy front page with a lot of important news, and we hope everybody reads everything. But yes, we tried to set it up so that you could really see the two sides of this issue, which is it's not easy. It's not an obvious kind of like, well, the hospital's cutting funds. It's what Mark Herko is saying, the head of Sharon Hospital, and what Nuvance is saying is allow us to close labor and delivery, which is being underutilized, and that will help us to open some larger departments that might be of more use. I guess the question we all have to look at and that the Office of Health Strategy will look at as they're determining whether Nuvance will be allowed to make this change is whether they're telling the truth. And there's some concern that promises that have been made a few years ago have not been kept. So we're looking into the investigation on that for our issue next week. But a very active, lively rally on the Sharon Green by Save Sharon Hospital, a group that pulled together was it 2018 when when Nuvance had originally said that they were going to close down labor and delivery. And the photo is people who have either were born at Sharon Hospital or deliver their children there. And, of course, let's not forget that part of the reason why labor and delivery is so wonderful at Sharon Hospital is we have such wonderful doctors here at Sharon OBGYN.
And that rally on the green, I was just blown away. Around 400 people showed up on a chilly day. And you know, there were people that represented individuals, families, doctors, nurses, also politicians from New York and Connecticut on both sides of the aisle. It was one of the most really diverse crowds I've ever seen in a local rally.
Right. And the most important thing is, as you're mentioning these government officials, as they keep saying, you really need to send your notes to the Office of Health Strategy. It's great to show up for a rally, but you should be sending letters also and expressing your concern. And also, use the hospital. Like, that's an important way to keep that hospital open. If there was, what is, I think they did a survey at New Vance and said only 40% of people who could have had their babies here had them. And, you know, you don't know how they got that statistic, but, you know, it's a reminder if you want that hospital to keep its services there, you need to use them. And also, Janet will talk about this when you get to letters, but a good letter from the community board, and we had had some questions from Safe Sharon Hospital saying, you know, who's on that board? We want to know who's on that board. So they've come out and said, you know, all of their names are on there.
All right. Another story that's on the front page, and it's what people have to think about now and what they're going to have to think about in the future, by Patrick Sullivan. Trash disposal, what it costs now, what you do now, and what's going to happen in the future.
This is one of the stories that people's eyes just glaze over it as they see it, but this is not just a front page story. It's a story throughout this issue of the paper, and that's going to continue to be and has been, which is all of our trash from the northwest corner. The reason it's called a transfer station where you take your garbage to, it's transferred to another facility that disposes of it. And, you know, for various reasons over the years, our regional trash facility has been allowed to deteriorate to the point where it really can't be repaired. And so now our trash is going to be shipped out of state, and instead of being burned here to produce energy, it's going to be buried in the ground in states in the South that are willing to take it. And that's not a great thing for anybody, including for taxpayers who will see a big increase in the cost of their trash disposal. And so towns are trying to decide. MIRA, which is the state facility, is just saying we need to find out who is with us on this and who's going to accept this increase so that we can go ahead and make our contract. And some towns, including Cornwall, are saying, you know, it just doesn't fit how we see ourselves as a town. How can we find another solution? I'm not sure there is another solution. But one thing all the towns are talking about is an increase in ability to compost food waste, which is the heaviest, wettest garbage. And, you know, I certainly believe in it, but for a lot of people it's hard because you have so many wild animals in your yard, and of course the bears just love it when you dispose of your compost in the yard. So another super complicated issue, hard to know how it's going to resolve.
All right, and your story, which I'll turn to A3, it was a quirky election in Connecticut and New York. Not a lot of contested contests, but weird petitioning candidates, also new parties. It was a little quirky election.
It was weird, and some of the people that were petitioning, often when you see petitioning candidates, it's somebody who's sort of often, you know, left field or not fully expecting to win. But the people that were petitioning, for the most part, were people who were either incumbents on a board or a commission who, some, you know, when Kent, we had a chairman of planning and zoning, and you never quite know, like, what's behind all these situations. And a couple times we'd ask people, and they'd sort of shrug and roll their eyes. So hard to say, but again, oddly, a lot of the petitioning candidates were returned to their seats, but I think we always say thank you so much to anybody who's willing to take on the big job of being on these boards and commissions.
Affordable housing, the Cornwall has rated a plan that's going to go to a public hearing on December 8th.
And of course, the state is requiring all towns to have an affordable housing plan as part of their town plan of conservation and development. These are the basis of your zoning regulations and your planning regulations. They determine what your town will look like and how it will function. I have to say, Cornwall is the town that has been most outspoken and active, as far as we are aware, in terms of setting up that plan. But, of course, all these towns are thinking about it and working hard at it.
Interesting story on page A5, and that is the Salisbury Board of Selectmen, not only about the plan with trash, but First Selectman Curtis Rand with a very strong statement. I mean, it was a very strong statement, basically saying that he and the town opposed the New Vance plan.
Right, and also Selectman Don Mayland, who is an economics expert and longtime professor at the Hotchka School, saying, like, this is not okay, and we are not behind it. And, you know, these are people who are pretty knowledgeable about what's going on and about statistics and numbers, and they're saying this is not right. But then in terms of the trash plan also, so again, these are front page stories, but you're going to see them throughout the paper as each town tries to address these issues. And Salisbury, a particularly well-run transfer station shared by two towns, always has been pretty efficient looking for inventive ways to keep prices down and sell off wherever possible. Recyclables and stuff, and it's hard.
You know, I've got a story by Patrick Sullivan, and you don't think about this all the time, but Salisbury Congregational Church, they're looking to upgrade and become more energy efficient, and this is not an inexpensive or an easy process to do.
No, and of course, we have a story next week on Eversource has just announced there's a 20% increase in electric rates for customers here. And of course, all we've heard for the last year from the government is like, we're holding Eversource down after Isaias and, you know, keeping the cost down. But of course, as somebody explained to me from the state's utility regulation authority yesterday, you know, we voted in Connecticut to split up distribution and supply of electric and basically break a monopoly. And so the distribution is being held, the cost is being held down by the state, but supply is not, and so there's going to be a 20% increase in your electric bill coming in next year. And so we're all looking now at solar and other alternatives for how to keep those bills down. The Congregational Church has moved forward. They wanted to be very transparent about it, had a whole meeting where they explained not only what they were doing, but other energy-efficient steps that regular homeowners can take here. But the trucks are already out at the Congregational Church, which is, of course, the town's church, the main church in town next to the library.
And, you know, it's not often that I'll speak in favor of Eversource, but on top of their having to hold the line, they're receiving from their suppliers anywhere from a 30 to 50% increase in natural gas and in all that stuff. And it's, you know, and if you look at the inflation rate, it's the highest it's been in this country in 30 years. So it's going to be a rough winter for a lot of people to get through with an increase of energy rates anywhere from 30 to 50% in Connecticut.
And I'm getting an in-house audit next December 9th that Eversource offers, yep. And everybody should look into it. It was actually a fairly painless process to book it, and they subsidized the cost of it. And I've realized, because I was looking into solar, I'm using much more electricity than I realized, and I think probably we all are. So it's a great service, and book it before those appointments are all gone.
All right. We're going to go to the opinion page first. Janet, your editorial, really both into two of the different editorials, the editorial on Veterans Day and also the tragedy next door.
Right. We talk about Veterans Day. It's unique this year because we've ended our war in Afghanistan.
First time in
20 years.
Yeah, first time in 20 years.
Yeah. You know, as Americans, we get so accustomed to just following what's happening in the foreign war. And we are now at a point where we don't have that. And so we should be grateful for that, you know, no matter how the ending of it was handled, et cetera. There can be lots of discussion about that, but it's done, and we are not in a ground war anywhere in the world right now. So for that, we should be grateful. It's not as if our troops are not overseas and they are not at risk, you know, protecting our country. However, it's different. So, and yeah, we talk about the tragedy in Millerton, which affects all of us in the region, and you know, our hearts go out to the Yang family and to all the families affected, and we hope that everyone continues to step up and, you know, find places for these families to live. That is a critical need right now, and thanks to our first responders who just acted bravely and selflessly in the moment made a difference.
And here's where I'm going to come in about local journalism. You're a weekly paper. There are papers in New York State. Not one single paper in New York State covered the fire in Millerton. And people can now turn to the Lakeville Journal and the Millerton News. I mean, we reported on it. We do that. But that's different. People can now go to the paper and get a full local story on not just about the fire and its immediate after, but more in depth. And I point this out because this is why we need local journalism.
Yeah, and this is one of the reasons we're so committed to staying here. You know, our reporter over in Millerton, Caitlin Lyle, was on the scene quickly. And, you know, I went over and spent about an hour and a half there just, you know, it's, you can hear about things happening. You can hear rumors about things happening, but it really helps to have people there speaking to the fire chief. Caitlin interviewed everyone, and you know, on Sunday after the fact. And it's interesting. I had some people say to me Saturday night, "Well, why haven't you posted anything about it? You should have just put something up." And I said, "You know, our goal is to put something up that is not misleading a day later, but has as much of the actual factual story around an event like this, because it's fraught and difficult enough without putting information out that is incomplete." So we did the best we could to work directly with the fire chief over in Millerton and have information directly from their press release, and because, you know, they need time to think too. They were at the scene all day on and into the night on Saturday, and then back Sunday morning early to investigate and go through the buildings, and it'll be ongoing. It's ongoing, but we will keep in touch with them, and we will follow up with the story.
All right, let's go to the letters to the editor, because some interesting letters. The Revenge of Eversource about the cutting of trees, letter about nurses and staff, the gratitude, and lots of different letters, once again, about different things.
I recommend them this week really highly, because that letter we have from the nurses and staff at the birthing suites at Charon Hospital just brings it all home. You know, they're Kim Beres and all of them are sending gratitude to the community. And, you know, the crowd on Saturday, I think, is a reflection of how many of us have either been born at Charon Hospital or had our children at Charon Hospital. I am one. And, or both. And so this is, quite an emotional issue for many people in the area. Don't miss Carolyn McDonough's letter either. She shares her experience. She had giving birth at a Naval Air Station hospital, which is fascinating, and she gives some really wise advice. And, you know, that letter from Liz Peel, it is interesting. She is so aware, as was her husband Tony, our late columnist and, quite an amazing man, very aware of what's happening with the trees and where they're getting cut and wondering why. So do read that letter, too. Yeah, we're always glad to see these kinds of letters to make us all step back and think. We also have that Charon Hospital board. It's a guest commentary that they talk about their perspective on the changes to come at the hospital, and they put it all out there, and they have their names out there, and they ask people to speak with them, and yeah, it's a tough time and a tough situation, but all means, reach out to them.
And people have to realize this is a local board. They can weigh in, but the real board is the New Vance board,
right,
which decides these things. And I'm glad that they all put their name on this letter that was released to the community and their feelings. You've got another Viewpoint article. If the presidential election were held today.
All right. This is from Dick Hollis, who is always good at thinking more deeply about events. He looks at the past and he looks at the future. So this week he's looking at the future and thinking about what the next presidential election will hold. And we always enjoy his insight.
And Peter Riva, When Someone Passes Grief and Tradition, a timely column for what we've been through.
It is. It just seemed as if he was prescient. You know, this week he was thinking about the holidays upcoming and knowing that so many people are in a period where they are in grief because of one reason or another, and here we are. It just seemed ideal to have this week for our readers and our community.
All right. I want to move on to the story Patrick Sullivan did about the Housatonic Youth Service Bureau. This is an interesting story, Cynthia, because they really want to make themselves sustainable, but also I think they want to bring themselves out more into the view of the public so the public really knows what they do.
Of course, you and I, all of us on this call, remember back when Roberta Willis was so involved in starting the Housatonic Youth Service Bureau, part of a national program of youth service bureaus. Cynthia Bianchi ran it so beautifully for years. It was very very oriented toward programming, so people really were aware of it. And then it became much more oriented toward providing therapy, a little bit more private. And so they're under new leadership now, and they have a new development director who is going to be doing more and more activities and events, and they always do nice programs there, and we should support them. And also next to that story, a lot of people have been seeing eagles lately, yeah. And apparently this is not a fluke. There's been an increase in the population of eagles around here, which is fantastic. And then in Compass this week, one of my heroes, Otto Penzler, who is the mystery man of all time, is going to be doing a Zoom talk with the Cornwall author Gregory Galloway. I got a chance to read a PDF of his new book, Just Thieves. Very good. So that's going to be an interesting talk on Saturday. I've signed up for it. Bethany Schaefer from Audubon and Sharon, a great column on why it's okay to not rake up your leaves at this time of year, and you don't have to tell me twice not to rake up my leaves. We have the Mount, which I'm embarrassed to say I've never been to, but Edith Wharton's beautiful house, a great writer, and also a famous home decorating and design expert of her time. And, of course, the Mount, a gorgeous, glorious property, and it's getting ready for its special holiday glamour and beauty. And so we have information on different walks they have through artistic scenes on the property. Beautiful 20th century Japanese prints at the Clark. And then a member of the Lakeville Journal family, the Reverend Sav Fries from Norfolk, has an exhibition of his photos at the Canaan Library.
A busy week and a distressing week, but once again, a week that shows why local journalism is needed and local media is needed in this area. And a good job in both the Millerton News and the Lakeville Journal, which you covering this fire and getting in depth behind the scene important information now.
And we will continue to do that. And the one thing we can just say is please don't, a month from now, these families will still all be affected by this, and we have to keep them in our thoughts and take continue action.
Absolutely right.
All right. Guys, we'll speak to you next week. Hopefully a better week.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Take care. This week in the Lakeville Journal, you can hear it, of course, every Thursday here on Robinhood Radio. Of course, it is on our on-demand page, robinhoodradio.com. Click on on-demand. Click on This Week in the Lakeville Journal.